The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Everything at both dealerships is backed by Morse. That means 73 years of the Ed Morse family name on their great dealerships across the state of Florida. Join over 1 million satisfied customers. You can see on the websites it's actually over 1.2 million. That's EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. And of course, the Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa dealership, just west of 275 on Fletcher, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you can go there. They're right there on Causeway Boulevard. The incredible April offers are on the websites, and you'll even see them, as always, on JoeBucksFan.com. The 2019 XTS, 0% APR for 72 months for qualified buyers, plus $1,500 down payment assistance. When you finance through GM Financial, it's all at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. And at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, the all-new 2019 XT4 has arrived. $339 per month lease. All the details at EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Thanks to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon for supporting all of Ira's work at JoeBucksFan.com. Now, the draft is coming up 3 weeks away and a couple of days. Opening night of the draft, Thursday night, the big party, the Bucks Uncensored, Bucks Mob, Joe Bucks Fan blowout, which was unreal last year with Derek Brooks in the house and Brent Grimes and other officials right there. Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa. It's the big location right on Dale Mabry. Get there early, stay all night. It will be an absolute blast. Bud Light is one of the sponsors. There are plenty of drink specials. It will be a great time inside and outside in the parking lot. What a great setup it will be. And it's all about the football and the fun, so you're not going to miss the draft if you're outside or anything like that. And then we do it all again on Friday. More details are coming. Of course, listen to Bucks Uncensored, and you'll hear all the little details. The hotel is sold out. We got 10 states represented, I think, so far. Other countries, it will be the usual absolute mayhem. And, of course, Ira Kaufman will be there wearing his Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon shirt, and you will, and probably his hat as well, and he'll be accepting gifts as he always does, and he's pulled away quite a big haul the last couple of draft parties. All right, here's the star of the show and our podcast today, the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Yay, yay.
The internationally popular edition, although I don't know about the Vatican. They hear you in Israel. They hear you in Vietnam. They hear you in Korea. I don't know the Vatican, for that matter, Prague, or you pick a religious place. At any rate, it's the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport Richie, the custodian of Camden. It is the one and only Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you?
Lee, I hear I am particularly popular at the Wailing Wall, which is what they do after they read one of my columns. I knew I'd get you on that
one. I'm starting to think Mecca. That's what I was thinking of. Mecca.
You know,
the Wailing Wall.
Once again, it is you and I carrying the ball, carrying the water. But we can do it. We can do it without Isbits. We miss we miss his negativity and his probing. You know, he's always looking under rocks for things. We'll catch Steve next week. Lee, we're still basking in the glow of three Buck players coming to the podium on Monday.
Basking.
You got Mike Evans, Vernon Hargraves, and you got Shaq. As we speak today, Mike Evans waxing poetic about his willingness, almost eagerness, Lee, mm-hmm. to play on defense both ways. Now, look, Lee, that stuff went out in the 50s for a reason. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Injuries, you know, pushed up to the nth degree, and exhaustion, you know. So for, it would certainly hurt Evans as a receiver. So, Lee, as far as I'm concerned, it was one big April Fool's joke. Having said that, Lee, you and I would not mind seeing Evans in the end zone on a Hail Mary play, playing defense. I'm okay with that.
Oh, of course. That's the first thing I thought.
Now,
of course, he played defense in the Pro Bowl and he got an interception in the Pro Bowl. And the look on your face.
And that's why the Pro Bowl is the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you look like you've been into a sour lemon. Like, yum. So, but yeah, that's exactly right. So I think it's just, he was just having fun.
Some of the stuff he said was classic. I mean, nobody's going to beat me deep. Nobody.
Who's the last guy to go two ways? Troy Brown?
Maybe Deion?
Yeah, that's right, Deion. Talk about can't see the forest.
And as superb an athlete as Mike Evans, there's only one Deion Sanders.
Been the best athlete ever played.
You got Bo Jackson, but, I mean, you got Deion Sanders.
Yeah, Bo didn't go both ways, but Deion Sanders is one of the greatest athletes ever lived. You could argue he's the modern day, or was the modern day Jim Thorpe. He was that good. Now, Roy Green, I know, used to go both ways.
On your Cardinals.
Yeah, that was the early 80s, early to mid-80s.
He was a wide receiver, and a good one.
Yeah, he came up as a cornerback, and he was a decent cornerback. And out of desperation, they tried him one time during practice. I remember Jim Hanifin.
What'd they do, put him next to Roger Worley, opposite Worley?
Probably. Worley was on the team then, I think. And, they just tried him out of practice. He did well, and he went be a wide receiver. And you know, as time went on, he more and more. And pretty soon they said, now you're a full-time receiver.
Did I get a laugh out of you, Lee, on Monday when Evans was going off on and on about all I want to do is help my ball club, my versatility. Yeah. I can help here. I can help there. I'm sitting there. And in my inimitable style, sort of like when I said to Raheem Morris, you know, when he said it was a race to 10, and I said, does that count the preseason, Raheem? And he said, only you would say that, Ira. So I'm sitting there for Mike Evans. He's talking about how he wants to help the ball club and this, I'll do anything and this and that. I go, what if they need you at center, Evans? Ooh, he froze.
He knew better.
Like he bit into a sour pickle over there. So I think that'll, look, again, it's April Fool's Week. Let's take it for what it is.
While I'm thinking about it, I got a wailing wall story for you. Although I've never been outside the shores of the United States, Howard Cosell was at the Wailing Wall one time. And who did he run to at the Wailing Wall?
You saw a video of this?
No, I remember Howard Cosell talking about
this.
Who did he run into?
Wait a minute. Roy Cummings. No. Hold on. Arnold Schwarzenegger. No. Who was it?
Don Shula.
Oh, my goodness.
And he went up to Shula and goes, what are you doing here? At least I'm a Jew.
Shula said, we're thinking about opening a new Shula Steakhouse over here. We're scouting the location.
Franchise.
You know, speaking of Shula, it's amazing how you come up with some stuff that triggers something. I would say 10 years ago, Lee, maybe even 15, I'm working for the Trib. And Shula's Steakhouse, which is on West Shore, not far from Kennedy, they had just opened or something, or they were going to open. And somebody in the sports department, Nick Puglisi, says, hey, Shula's coming to town, you know, Thursday. He's available for interviews, doing publicity for Shula's Steakhouse. You want to sit down with him? Of course I want to sit down with the man, you know.
Not to mention at a steakhouse.
And not to mention lunch is included. Not to mention, that's the number one, enticement.
Draw.
Draw. So I polished off a 32-ouncer over there, Lee.
With baked potato?
Half a baked potato.
Okay.
And
sour cream?
And I believe they had a beet salad.
There you go.
No, I'm not sour cream.
No, not sour cream. No chives.
So he wasn't in a wheelchair back then like he is now, I believe. You're talking about the legend, you know, man with the most coaching wins. And I had a great conversation with him. And I remember one of the points I made, you know, and I had been adamant over the years. And now I finally got Shula to, you know, bounce it off. I go, Don, you know, 72, the perfect season, unbelievable. Nobody's done it since, may never happen in our lifetime. I said, but you struggled a little bit in the postseason. You won, but you had to come back.
Yeah.
They beat the Redskins. It was 14-0 until the stupid Garrow, your premium play. But they weren't blowing people out. In 73, Lee, they killed people in the postseason. Killed people. They played the Raiders.
Mm.
Killed them. Super Bowl, I believe they played the Vikings.
Killed
them. Yeah. Killed them. They had a better offense in 73, a better defense in 72. So I said to Shula, there's a little boy from Brooklyn, you know, questioning Shula. I go, Don, you've always talked about the 72 Dolphins. They had a perfect team. Nobody's ever going to match them. I go, I think 73 was better. I look at him. It's like I bit off a bad piece of steak or something.
Wow.
He goes, you're wrong. He goes, you're wrong. Postseason, we killed people. You're right, 73. Games were over at halftime. But there's something about that perfect season.
Sure.
Yeah, and I understand that. Let's put it this way. Back-to-back, the first team went 14-0, and then the postseason. Second team went 12-2, then the postseason. I mean, that team went like 30-2 over those 2 years. That's pretty strong.
And what was their record when they lost to Dallas in the Super Bowl? That was the year I think they beat your Chiefs on Christmas Day. That's the first NFL game I could vividly remember.
You're right. That was the year the Chiefs lost on Christmas Day. Then they beat Baltimore. They did beat Baltimore in the AFC title game.
Mm-hmm.
And then they played Dallas. That Dallas team was stacked.
Yes.
That was stacked.
Bob Lilly and all those guys.
Yeah, stacked. And I'm a Chiefs fan. Even if the Chiefs would have beat the Dolphins, and I think they would have beat Baltimore, I don't think they would have beat Dallas. Dallas was that good in 71. But Miami was coming, and you could see it. And then don't forget the miracle in Miami, which they were going for the three-peat in 74, and that was the hands play against the Raiders.
Sea of Hands?
Yeah, Sea of Hands.
I thought that was in Oakland.
Oakland won. I think that game could have been in Miami, possibly. I'm not sure.
It was the last second heave.
Yes, it was.
Stabler was actually falling down. It would have been a sack, and he just heaved it.
Otherwise, they're going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wait a minute, Lee.
In the third quarter, it turned the game around.
A fake punt. I think it was a fake punt.
It was a fake punt.
A fake punt. I think the guy's name was Larry Seipel. All you Dolphin fans out there.
I remember that.
All right, let's talk about what struck you about this linebacker that the Bucs plucked off Denver's team as a free agent. You know, I think that could end up maybe being their best free agent pickup, Lee. I got a feeling.
Well, they don't have much of a bar to set because
he's used to being in a 3-4, Lee.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Helps.
And he said that's the way he came here. If the Bucs weren't flipping to a 34, he wouldn't have come here. Which I thought was interesting, and that's going to lead to our next subject.
Did you notice that I asked him if he played predominantly right or left, and did he care? And he goes, well, Von Miller picks his side, and Von Miller picks the left side. But he said he's more comfortable on the left side. So
I'm sure they're going to let him do what he's comfortable doing.
And you know what? I think that's a plus for the Bucs because, look, I hate to keep mentioning this guy's name, Lee, because you cringe every time I mention him. But Noah Spence.
Yeah, where is he?
If this is his last hurrah, you would think he would come off the right side. You're not going to shift him to the left side, and because he doesn't have that kind of strength. You got to be a force coming off that left side. And we'll see. I mean, but I think most big pass rushers are right ends or right edge rushers. Most of them.
Yeah,
that's the classic blind side left tackle.
Yeah.
So if Shaq wants to play the left side, I think the Bucs say bravo.
In a podcast on Monday that we first recorded, we mentioned a couple players. It's like a do or die time for them.
Yes.
Jameis and Vernon. And I mentioned, you even said, you know, take your pick as number one or number two.
Well,
we forgot about Spence. He's right there, too. It's do or die time for Noah Spence.
But obviously, Winston's number one because of virtue of the position.
Yeah, okay, fair.
No question.
Yes.
And the first overall pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Noah Spence, Lee, he's been through so much and shown so little. Not terrible as a rookie, right? Not terrible.
He showed signs of, you know, like, okay.
Sort of like Hargraves. Sort of like Hargraves.
You know, that's a good point. That's a very good point. You know, I think it's pretty fair to say now that Bucs defensive coaches were trying to fit square pegs in the round holes.
I saw you wrote that on Monday. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I don't think it's inaccurate.
That is not a compliment.
It's not a compliment. And so could this be the same thing with Noah Spence now? I just thought it was interesting that, you know, there's a little bit of old news, and we've discussed this before too, but at the Combine, I'm sitting, you pretend you're Jason Light. I'm sitting right next to you, a little bit closer. Not that there was anything wrong with that, but I was a little bit closer to him. And he said right to my face, right to everybody's face, Noah Spence is a linebacker. He's an outside linebacker. And that was after 3 years of trying the guy. Now, granted, most of that time he was hurt. You can't predict that. But that was after force feeding him. Even though he was a linebacker in college, you're going to be defensive end. And after showing some promise as a rookie, he did. There were some games, and I'm still one of the most impressive games I've seen in the last few years was rookie season, Noah Spence playing against Carolina. He didn't have a huge game, but the fact that he was playing with one shoulder, he had separated his shoulder again, and he threw it back into place while he was on the field, and that son of a gun chased down and tackled. Didn't sack up, but tackled Cam Newton. I think Newton got a half yard or maybe a yard gain. It's like a big dude like Cam Newton, and you're tackling him with one arm, basic. And just the willpower. The willpower to get through that pain and to keep playing and to try to help your... It was a close game, if I remember correctly. Carolina had fourth down on the goal line, maybe the one-yard line. They didn't get it in. The Bucs prevailed, and they won their ninth game, first winning season since Raheem in 2010. And at that time, all of us thought, here we go. This team's on the cusp. They got their quarterback. Looks like they got a pass rusher. And it just collapsed from
and
there.
A year later, they're defending their goal line against Carolina late in the game.
Swaggy!
And Swaggy goes off. That was a classic. You know, Lee, what'd you think of... I thought it was strong stuff by Shaq. It was the very last thing that he started talking about, his reflections on his years in Denver. It might have been your question. Somebody was saying how the Broncos built a reputation, obviously capped by their Super Bowl season, mm-hmm. for, you know, suffocating defense. And they had some stars, Lee. You know, Von Miller's a stud.
Oh, yeah.
Aqib Talib's a stud. Mm-hmm. Chris Harris, you know, excellent corner. DeMarcus Ware was still good. Mm-hmm. They got guys up front.
Wade Phillips running the show.
That was a fearsome defense. No question. Mm-hmm. Fast. Led by Miller, of course. It was great to hear Shaq talking about Miller gets to pick what side he wants to play. And why not? I mean, he was arguably the best defensive player in football. Mm-hmm. And still an elite player. But, Lee, you remember he talked about it for 2 or 3 minutes. As much as he talked about the talent that was on that side of the football field, and there was a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And most of it's gone. And the Bucs had one of them with T.J. Ward, and that didn't work out. And so anyway, Lee, you were there. He talked about camaraderie. Mm-hmm. He talked about closeness. He talked about guys playing for each other and what they did off the field, constant get-togethers. Mm-hmm. Miller maybe was the catalyst. Hey, come on over to the house. Who's going to turn down Von Miller? Especially if he's got, you know, stuff cooking in the backyard.
Yeah.
Lee, that's a little something that's been missing around here, you know. I'm not sure. I'm not saying they all got to be over each other's house every day. But, Lee, you know that I'm on the right track in terms of building, you know, that trust in one another, mm-hmm. and you don't want to let your teammate down. That goes a long way.
That's interesting. Logan Mankins is a big believer in backyard barbecues. He'd always have his teammates.
And when's
over.
The last time the Bucs ran the ball with Logan Mankins?
You know, someone brought this up the other day, and I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg. Yes, it's true that offensive line hasn't been the same since he left, but does that speak to a bigger problem? I mean, Logan Mankins was on his final legs. He retires. 2 years later, or 3 years later, actually, they still haven't recovered. Doesn't that speak to a bigger issue?
Yes. A leadership void, first of all.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, I wouldn't say broken down, but an old offensive lineman retires. 3 years later, even though you've got 2 second-round picks and a big-time free agent on that line, and your offensive line still supposedly can't recover, that tells me it was either coaching or you got a couple of lunkheads on the offensive line. I don't know.
Lee, it's funny you bring that up because you saw the transcript and the video of Bruce Arians in Phoenix. You remember one of the questions was, hey, who's the leader up front in that group? He immediately said, Ali. Mm-hmm. He didn't say Ali Marpet. He said Ali. he's well familiar mm-hmm. with Marpet's skills, versatility. But Lee, you know Marpet like I know Marpet, and I'm not sure he's a natural leader. He's probably the best player on that unit, but yeah, I don't know that he's, you know, that Logan Mankins type. I don't know that.
I don't know that either. He's certainly not an extrovert, not a type A guy. He's a great guy, don't get me wrong.
His family's fantastic. I love being around those people.
Yeah, Ali's a good dude, but he's not gregarious. He's not outgoing. He's very approachable, but if you don't approach him, you sometimes don't even know he's in the locker room. But that's no criticism whatsoever of him. Just he doesn't have that personality. But Ian Mankins wasn't.
And Dot doesn't have that personality, even though he's the longest tenured Buck.
Yeah, a little bit.
You do need a fiery guy up there, Lee. It helps sometimes.
I was going to say it certainly helps, especially at that position.
Maybe Jensen. Maybe.
Could be.
You know, but he just arrived last year.
Sure. Isn't that organic, a leader, for the most part?
Oh, nice word. Kemper.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really force it, I don't think. I mean, obviously I don't have the resume that you have, but it just seems like the years, relatively speaking, compared to your resume, a Joe Bucks fan has been around, it doesn't seem like guys can say, I'm the leader. It's organic. If it happens, it happens. Yes. It doesn't.
And as Dotson said, we as players can see through guys in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Try to be a leader, and you're not, you're going to get exposed. Now, Lee, we're less than a month away from the draft, say about 3 weeks from that Thursday night. And
you will be gallivanting?
I will be at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
And look forward to it. Have a great time. And I see the same faces. I mean, it's fabulous. And they treat me great over there. Don't forget, the guy gave me a Brett Favre jersey. I wore it on Brooks's show. Brooks goes, "What the hell are you doing with a Brett Favre jersey? You wore a Lightning jersey. I can wear a Brett Favre jersey." So, Lee, three weeks away. What are you seeing as some kind of a consensus? Maybe if the Bucks don't trade down, I don't see them trading up. But if they don't trade down, and I'm sure you don't see them trading up either. I mean, you'd have to think that some guy is the next Bruce Smith. If you're going to give up a second round pick to move from 5 to 3, that guy's got to be tremendous.
As opposed to Andre Bruce.
Daquan Vallis. So what kind of consensus have you found at number 5? You're seeing a little
bit. You're going to love it.
You're seeing a little Devin White?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, you're going to love it. Devin White. And I'm not saying that's a huge consensus, but I see that a lot. You know,
anybody got Bosa still sticking around to 5 or absolutely not?
Oh, I've never seen that.
Okay.
I have seen Josh Allen. Some people suggest that Josh Allen could slip to the Bucks. That would depend on quarterbacks being picked.
You see Sweat being there at 5.
Yes. Yeah, I do. But and especially one guy, I don't know if you know him or not. I obviously know him. He's always been good to me. He's well plugged in, very well plugged in. He doesn't throw crap against the wall. Peter Schrager, the NFL Network,
Big
Fox
Buck
Sports.
Fan. Big Buck fan.
He sure smells like it.
Yeah, he's got a thing out for the Bucks.
He seems pretty convinced that Devin White's coming here. Like I say, he's pretty well plugged in. He doesn't throw crap against the wall.
You see Ed Oliver being available, right, at 5.
Yeah, I do too. And I've said this on a previous podcast. To me, it's very interesting that Ed Oliver scouts are saying, well, he was misused. And still, he was a terror. And he was misused. So that tells me the guy's got a higher ceiling than, let's say, a Quinnen Williams.
Well, if he was misused, he fit right into the Bucks. Right? Oh, that's a cheap shot, Lee. Now, Lee, let me throw this out at you. I'll set it up the way it should be set up. Now, you're going to be at $1 that Thursday night.
With all my friends.
And yeah. 3 of whom might say hello to you out of 11.
Jenna, Mark Cook, yeah. And the custodian. The custodian.
Yeah. And he's a maybe. So he talked to me last week. He said he doesn't like you anymore. But anyway.
Trevor will talk to
so
me.
You're going
to
be sitting down. Now, Lee, fair to say, when Goodell strides to the podium with the 5th pick in the 2019 NFL draft. And where is it? In Nashville? Yeah, Nashville. Music City.
Yes.
Lee, you're going to be sitting down. Is it fair to say you might fall off your chair if it's an offensive player?
Yeah. I would be very surprised.
You would fall off your chair if it's a defensive back?
No. I'd be very surprised. Not
could,
as surprised.
Could be Greedy player. Williams, and you're okay?
I still want an edge rusher, and you know, if not an edge rusher, I could be okay. I'd be okay with a defensive tackle, cornerback. Like, and what we heard Monday from Hargraves, I don't know if we should read too much into that. It sure smells to me like the Bucks have settled on our starting corners, Hargraves and Carlton Davis.
Outside corners, yes.
Outside corners, yes.
I believe that's true. I believe they have settled on those.
So maybe that's. I don't know if it's a draft tip off or not, but if that's the case.
And like you've said many times, you don't take a guy at 5 to be a nickel corner.
Yeah, part-time guy. Yeah. Even though part-time 70%, still, a number 5 guy, you want him on the
Lee,
field.
If you take a number 5 corner, and I believe this is where the guy got drafted his season when he was a rookie, the guy's got to be Patrick Peterson. I believe Peterson might have been the 5th pick of his draft. That's the type of guy you got to get at corner. Am I correct?
Yeah, and Greedy Williams, although he's pretty good at covering, he's not so good at tackling. And I think I wrote on JoeBucksFan.com that unless you're Deion Sanders, you can't get away with that. And even Williams himself at the Combine confessed, I have to be a better tackler. To his credit, he was one of his first words out of his mouth. They asked him about his game, and he came right out and said, I need to be a better tackler. So I give him credit for saying that. It's not like he's hiding it. He admitted it, and I give him credit for that. But, again, unless you're Deion Sanders, you can't get away with being allergic to tackling.
Lee, if the Bucks don't draft a D lineman at 5, if they don't, does that mean McCoy's coming back necessarily?
Well, that's a great question. That is a great question. I would have to think yes.
Otherwise, they have depth issues.
Yeah. I would think yes. McCoy always, I don't want to speak out of bounds here, You know, I always got along with Gerald, always liked Gerald, always respected Gerald. But Gerald was one of these guys, like, I'm a leader. And we talked about this earlier. You can't really force yourself to be a leader. It's either organic or it's not. Like you said, I'm not saying Gerald's not sincere, but he was always one of these guys, I want to be the leader. I want to be the leader. And yet the Bucks have lost more often than not since he's been here. Not as bad as Lavonte David, but Lavonte David never put himself out there like, I'm a leader. And that rankles fans. Here he is, self-professed leader, at least before Jameis got here. And now he's not here for the these off-season conditioning workouts.
It's voluntary. It's voluntary.
It is voluntary. But do you think this is a precursor? Maybe he's worn his last Bucks uniform?
Now, Lee, if he does come back, if he does.
And by the way, I better preface this by reminding people, Jason Light has yet to commit publicly that Gerald's coming back. Is this Gerald like, okay, I'm done? Is this posturing?
Same with Arians.
Yeah, Arians is not committed either.
Lee, if he comes back, where does he fit on Bowles' scheme? Would you move him to D-end? Where do you put him? Isn't Vea a better fit as the nose tackle?
Sure. And some people even suggested Vea could be a defensive end in a 3-4. He's that talented. I can't remember who says this, but you hear this a lot. That's above my pay grade. I don't know whether he should be a nose tackle or an end. I know when Mike Smith was here, to his credit, he thought if you get Gerald out wide, he's got a better chance of getting at the quarterback. And there was some evidence that when he had wide splits, that he would have a better chance to get or did better getting to the quarterback. So I think there was some merit.
Lee, there was a guy that it was his first year of eligibility for the Hall of Fame. He made the list of finalists. He was in the room in Atlanta. He played a lot of D-tackle. He played a lot of D-end. I'm not sure where he was better positioned. The guy's name? Richard Seymour.
Interesting.
Richard Seymour. Mm-hmm. Could McCoy, after 9 NFL seasons, play a different position and play it well?
Possibly. Now, how much he wants to do that, I don't know. I remember 2 years ago, I believe it was 2 years ago, Mike Smith was trying to use a little bit of the 3-4. And Gerald groused about that. And I remember one time, your friend at the Times asked him. I was in the scrum. He asked him about playing in a 30 defensive end in a 34. Maybe it was a tackle, but playing in a 3-4 formation. Gerald bristled at that. You could tell he didn't like it. Now, his tune changed last year toward the end of the season. You know, he said, hey, I just want to play for the Bucks. I want to help the Bucks win. I'll do whatever I'm asked. And he did. The few times he was asked to play in the 3-4, he did play it. He didn't like it, but he was a good soldier about it. You could tell he didn't like it. You could tell he preferred the 43. Is this his way of saying, no, you guys are going to run a 34 front, and now you guys are squeezing me about my pay. Why don't you just release me? I don't know. I'm speculating. But you have to wonder, since he's sitting out, even though it's voluntary, he was always beating his chest. I'm a leader. I'm here. I'm a good teammate. And I'm not saying he's not, but he's not here. And guys that loft themselves up as leaders are usually always here.
The guy that I haven't asked you about for a couple of weeks, you talk about mystery. Now, McCoy thing is a little bit of a mystery.
Grimes.
But I got another guy. He's on the team. He's under contract. But nobody knows anything about him. His name's Kendall Beckwith. What is going on, Lee? What is going on?
To me,
what does it mean when they said, we'll know more in a month? What did that mean to you?
I believe he went through a physical today. Now, the results, I don't know yet. But it just...
The guy was a good-looking rookie.
Yes.
He hit the wall in December.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he was impressive.
It looked like he was going to be a fixture at linebacker, and some, whether it be middle linebacker, outside linebacker. He was going to be a fixture for the Bucks.
Didn't he fill
years.
In for Quan?
For
a month and look good doing it?
Yeah, he was hurt. Not suspended, but he was hurt. And Beckwith as a rookie held his own very well. He looked good, yeah. That accident he had where, you know, the Bucks won't tell us this. I understand why. But my guess is it sure smells like he shattered his ankle.
How much would it mean to have a healthy Beckwith?
Oh, my God.
Now that Alexander's gone.
Significant. But Jason Light's body language at the Combine... It just looked like, you know, he wouldn't tip his hand, but Jason's not a really good poker player, you know what I mean. And his body language was just like, man, it's a shame.
Lee, last year we thought he was coming back in November or December. We thought he was coming back. We asked every week, and Beckwith gave us nothing.
I seem to recall that the Bucks thought he'd be ready for training camp. I seem to recall it. And I could be wrong. I'm just going off the top of my head. And outside of Rachel Watson's measurements, I'm not really, you know, my memory, I guess I'm getting old. I guess my memory's slipping. But I seem to recall the Bucks are like, oh, no, he'll be ready for training camp. And that's a shame because obviously he wants to be out there. And he was working out. The Bucks had him on the field working out. He just couldn't get clearance to practice, you know, 100%. So, and he was chomping at the bit, too. So it has the stench of some really bad news, like his career might be over. That's what it smells like.
Lee, I'm going to ask you one more question, and we'll get out of here.
Well, people are listening for you, Ira, not
well,
me.
Well, after you talk, then I usually talk and tell you how you're wrong. What are you expecting, Mr. DeKemper, out of perhaps, certainly the Bucks' best defensive player of 2018, if not best player overall? You got Mike Evans, of course, would be JPP. You looking for any slippage from JPP? We could have a scheme change. How would that affect him? I assume he'd play at right end and keep Nassibet left end, as things stand right now. What do you expect out of him?
Well, that famous video you were referencing earlier, Bruce Arians at the coaches' breakfast at the NFL owners' meetings. You know, he said, you give me Deion, Levante David, JPP, the fourth guy, I can't remember. He said, let's roll. He goes, you told me that's my four linebackers? Let's roll. Now, how does he define outside linebacker in Todd Bowles' scheme? I defer to Pat Kerwin on that. Pat Kerwin, he said, we get caught up in scheme way too much. He said there's a lot of times a defense that's supposedly 34. He said, if you stop the tape right at the very snap, the instant the ball snapped, he goes, not what I call a 34. Looks more like a four-down line to me. So maybe, you know, it's a camouflage, so to speak. He had the quote from Arians. If you're going to tell me that's my four backers, let's roll. But he did mention JPP in there. So, yeah, his position will change. In that very same interview, Arians said, JPP, I'm going to line him up over a guard. He hasn't done a whole lot of that in his career, but I think he'll like it because he's trying to create a mismatch. He thinks
that's
JPP's
right.
Quick enough to get past a guard, to give guard fits.
And what did I say all year long? This guy is an extremely versatile defensive lineman. And I barked at Smith the first 6 weeks of the year because every time I looked, he was lined up at right end. He played a lot of left end with the Giants and was effective doing it. And with a guy like that, you look for your mismatches and you move him around. And he doesn't mind it. I thought the Bucks blew a big opportunity. Even though the pass rush overall was better than it was in 17.
And he got 13 sacks, right? Compared to how we've been conditioned for no sacks, that was like 20.
So we don't have to write up the Simeon Rice thing anymore.
I did it already.
You did it already. Get out of here, Lee.